As Hayes, Noodles, and O-Dog enjoy their time off, well-deserved, and say hi to everybody watching now on TSN 2. We continue on TSN 1050 as well. Coming up very shortly, CFL season starts Thursday night, Hamilton and Winnipeg. First Argonaut game is Saturday in Calgary, and we'll have Randy Ambrosi, the CFL commissioner, in shortly. Just want to pass along that the Jays have placed Soria on the 10-day injured list with a right middle finger inflammation. Retroactive to August 3rd, Taylor Cicito has been recalled and will be active for tonight's game.
I'd like to track how many transactions there have been in a major league season now, because it seems hardly a day goes by where this guy isn't being elevated to the roster, that guy isn't being put on an injured list, this guy isn't going to being sent back to Buffalo, or this guy isn't being DFA'd or waived. It's incredible, because I don't remember it being like that years ago, where it was this volatile.
Well, I don't remember, like, and I don't know how far back I want to go, but the finger injuries for pitchers are rampant. I mean, even the slightest problem is, I mean, and God bless them for being able to treat all this stuff, but what used to happen before? They just tried to work through it, or what?
Well, I wonder, and this would be a bigger picture kind of question and or argument, how much does spin rate have to do with injuries with pitchers? There's so much pressure on pitchers now because of analytics to have their spin rates at such a value that what does that do to your fingers? What does that do to your elbow? What does that do to your shoulder? So all these guys who used to throw 120 pitches, they're being protected now. They're, you know, the starting pitchers aren't going much more than 100 at any given time.
Right.
And you wonder how much does spin rate have to do when there's such a, I don't know, pressure on pitchers to have their, you know, their spin rate be what it is, which has caused by itself a whole other problem this year on, you know, what they were putting on their hands and what they were putting in their gloves and foreign substances and all the rest of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like there's too much information, or maybe not enough, because if you had the tracking of if you throw this pitch and you can only do 100 pitches per performance, maybe you don't want to throw that pitch.
Well, if you think, I'll use Bob Gibson as an example, because he's the best pitcher I've ever seen.
Complete outlier to today's world.
Yeah, but if Bob Gibson was forced to spin the ball the way they're now asking pitchers to spin the ball, would he have been able to pitch 300 innings a year like he did? Would he be able to have the kind of, you know, success and health? You know, you look at Fergie Jenkins' stats,
well,
the Canadian.
Those starters are complete games.
Yeah. It's amazing how many innings, year after year after year, without getting hurt, these guys did.
Well, in Bob Gibson's case, the fastest 300 innings you ever saw, because his games normally lasted less than 2 hours.
Yeah, and again, it's a different game they're playing.
Sure.
And, you know, what the numbers tell you and how many times you go through a lineup and all the other. I understand all of the progressions that have been made, but I still want to see a guy that can go out every fifth day and give me 9 innings if I need it.
The complete game is just a...
it's a rumor.
Well, it was such... I mean, your number one starter had to be able to give you a certain number of complete games. Otherwise, the rest of the staff was going to unravel.
Well, Sparky Anderson, years ago, managing the Detroit Tigers, was telling us one day in one of those pregame manager BS sessions that you have, was the most frightening thing that he did on any given day was to go to the mound and take the ball from Jack Morris.
Oh, wow. There's like, your original setup, man.
Well, it's like, I'm sorry, Jack. Yeah. I need the ball, please.
Yeah, because he would not come out.
Oh, he would not come out. And, no. And yet today it's put your hand out, put the ball in, see you later, move on. And in some case, you can be in the World Series and be throwing a close to a no-hitter when it happens.
And in Jack's case, as his career faded out, that was sort of the end of the starting pitcher with the complete game. That guy, he might have been one of the last ones.
Well, I think, I don't recall whether this stat is complete, but I think there were 2 complete games in the American League last year. So it was some ridiculous. I don't think the Jays had any.
Which was like a number 4 starter back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to give us 2 complete games. He's our number 4.
Yeah. 5, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah.
The Juan Berenguer of today.
You think in Toronto, for example, Dave Steeb had that killer slider. I mean, Dave Steeb was a phenomenal pitcher. And I think as time has gone on and the stats have changed and the numbers, you know, that they judge players by have changed, Dave Steeb now, his career looks better on paper than Jack Morris's career. Jack's in the Hall of Fame, although it took him a long time to get in. You know, there's an argument to be made, you know, because Dave Steeb was this in the 80s, and if you look back now, was a better pitcher than Jack Morris was for everything but the complete games and the amount of innings, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe it's time to reconsider his situation with the Veterans Committee, you know, that vote players in after their Hall of Fame days are over.
That's got to be worth some sort of a book, though, the transition of what pitching was to what it is today and how finely tuned it is. Yeah. Was it sort of a bulk thing before?
Oh, I think there have been some attempts at that kind of a book, and I think it's going to get more and more complex as time goes on. You know, we grew up in this town watching Roberto Alomar play second base, although we're not really supposed to mention his name anymore, but nobody played second base like he did. And now, because of the shifts involved with baseball, you don't see anything close to the kind of fielding plays you would see when we were watching it in the 80s and 90s. You just don't, because they're now positioned, and you're at the bat, and you hit it. Guess where? You're hitting it right to me, because that's what you do all the time.
Well, let's go to the CFL. It opens tomorrow night, Hamilton in Winnipeg and Toronto in Calgary on Saturday night. And let's bring in CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. Randy, welcome. How are you today, sir?
I'm good, Jim. How are you, my friend?
Good, good. So, I mean, this had to be and still probably is a pretty decent logistical dance, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly more complicated, but the world of sports and, you know, pretty much everything else in our lives is more complicated, so we don't get any special treatment.
But that said, you're back on the field tomorrow, and this has to be after the year from H. This has to be just a phenomenal feeling to be in that position.
Yeah, Steve, I finally was able to get my head out of the vise without somebody cranking it two more turns. And it does feel amazing and positive. And, you know, like, honestly, I am just excited to think about watching that first game and the second game and third and fourth this weekend, because it's what we've been waiting for a long time.
I mean, it's almost going to track like it was never away, right?
Well, I kind of think that's true, Jim. I think that at some point it'll just fall into a normal rhythm. But I think we're all going to remember the last 18, 19 months for a long time, because it had a dramatic effect on our lives and, you know, every element of what we did. So I'm not sure we'll forget it that fast. But, you know, the world of sports and you both know this so well, it's got remarkable powers to get us into a better place. And, you know, we put our fan hat on, and I think that's what's going to happen to, you know, tomorrow and through the weekend and for the rest of the season. We just get to be fans of our great game again.
So as tomorrow comes and Friday comes and Saturday comes and football returns, what concerns you the most?
Well, Steve, I'll tell you, it's the continued vigilance we need to have with the COVID crisis, and it hasn't gone away. And you know, I know the two of you are, watching this as closely as I am. You know, this Delta variant is something to be worried about, and obviously, we are doing everything we can to encourage everyone in our football ops to get vaccinated, because we just need to keep it out of our locker room.
So I have to worry about my house and my family and maybe my business as to how it affects me personally. You have to worry about British Columbia rules and Manitoba rules and Alberta rules and Saskatchewan rules and Ontario rules and Quebec rules. How hard has that been?
Well, it is hard, Steve, but again, I know you'll appreciate this. That's what makes, football being a team sport, it applies to this. Look, we've got a lot of really good people that are leaning in hard on this. We've got one of the really great changes that has come to the league since, you know, through this crisis was the, you know, creation of this co-chief medical officer role. We've got Dr. Nadeau, joining Dr. McCormick. You couldn't ask for two better partners to help us understand, you know, the medical issues. And of course, they're regularly talking with the Players Association. So in some ways, Steve, again, it's what makes our sport so special. It's a team sport, and I'm surrounded by great people.
And, you know, nothing is etched in stone, so you have to have two sets of, marching orders here. One where everything works out, and the other one where it doesn't. So if there is another wave in any one of these different provinces, what is the protocol? What would the league do?
Well, Jim, that's why we put a canceled game protocol in place, because we want it to be ahead of the curve. In the event that COVID shows up in our locker rooms, we want it to be ready. So, you know, these are the things that we've been doing, is just trying to be prepared for as many scenarios as we possibly can be. And then there's going to be something, if, you know, like it seems to be the way life works, there'll be something that we didn't expect. But, you know, we've been at this now in this COVID crisis for 18, 19 months, all of us. I think we've learned to be resilient. And that's what we're going to, if we weren't already resilient, which I think we were, I think we're more resilient today. And we're just going to adjust, because, we are fully committed to a Grey Cup championship on December the 12th in Hamilton.
So a couple of weeks ago, the NFL came out with a policy that said basically that if a team gets COVID internally and needs to forfeit a game, they will be charged a loss for that circumstance, and in their case, not paid for that week. You guys came out with a similar policy a few days ago. Parts of it that I'm not sure I understand, and maybe we need further clarification or explanation for those listening, is how does the ratio with Canadian and American players get affected by the possibility of games being canceled or players missing games?
Well, Steve, at present, what we have focused on in setting our criteria is that in order for a game to be canceled, you have to have fewer than 36 qualified players to play. Steve, some of those subtleties and nuances have not been addressed, because again, there's like a million combinations and permutations that might surface. I think what we will want to do, and we have put a consultation provision in our policy, we'll want to sit down with the players in that moment. We know the players want to play, and we know the Players Association wants our players to play. So, Steve, in that scenario, if it happens, and heaven forbid that it does, we'll sit down with the Players Association, we'll talk it through, and we'll figure something out. That's the spirit of our arrangement with them. I'm going to watch the opening game of the season with Brian Ramsey from the Players Association on Thursday. We're meeting in Winnipeg, and we're going to watch a game, and who knows, maybe if we're lucky, we'll have a big cold beer together. But what we're trying to do, Steve, is really think about how we work together to get through this season in a positive way.
Randy, kind of a tough question, but in terms of those listening and watching to us that want to go to these games, you've got a bunch of different protocols. What are we looking at for attendance?
Well, it is province by province, as you alluded to earlier. Every province is different. In Manitoba for opening night, Manitoba has not put any restrictions on attendance, but they have, in fact, made a requirement that you have to be double vaccinated. So there's going to, you're going to have to show your... If you're a Manitoban, you're going to have to show your double vaccinated COVID QR code, that and ID to get in. I'm bringing my Ontario certificate, which says I have now had two qualified vaccinations. Saskatchewan doesn't have any restrictions on attendance, and does not have those. Doesn't have a vaccination requirement, and Alberta is the same. They don't have a vaccination requirement with no restrictions. So it's right now, It's fluid. We know the provinces are going to adjust and adapt. We're talking about what next wave of criteria we'll put in for restrictions on our teams, kind of the protocol issue. Guys, I think it's going to be fluid, and I think we're going to all just have to take a deep breath at the start of every week. Hopefully be very thankful we got through the week before, and look forward to the next week. And if we have to make adjustments, we'll do that.
Years ago, Randy, I described the job of CFL commissioner. It's like being prime minister of Canada with no support from any of the provinces. How have you, in this past year and some, maybe past 2 years, been able to do your job, attempt to conduct your business, and kept what has historically been 9 individual non-league interested groups together?
Well, first of all, Steve, I'm not going to go out of my way to hire you as a motivational speaker for my next big event. I love you. I love you like a brother, but I'm taking you off my motivational speaker list. But no, listen, it's, Steve, we've known each other for a long time, and you know this job I have, and you'll appreciate what I'm about to say. You have to get up every day and you have to fight for it. If yesterday wasn't a great day, you have to get up today and you have to face the future. You have to try hard. You have to talk to the teams. You have to try to understand where they're coming from. Often it's a little messy, but you know what? If you love the game as I do, if you feel strongly about the CFL, which I do, then you got to fight for it. And that's just what it takes. It wasn't billed to me. Nobody told me when I took the job it was going to be easy. But I took it because I believe in it, Steve. And that's really it. It's you got to just get up every day. You might have to dust yourself off a little bit. But I love the league, and I love the teams, and I love the people I work with. And again, I get up every day and resolve to fight for the future.
Randy, really appreciate your time, and welcome back, and all the best.
Guys, to both of you and your families, best wishes to all your listeners. Let's do everything we can. Get vaccinated. Stay out of trouble, because there's a great future out there for us if we go grab a hold of it.
Thank you very much. Randy Ambrosi, CFL Commissioner. And, of course, the league returns tomorrow night. You'll see CFL on TSN return. We're all happy to have the crew back, for sure.
And Rod Smith doing the play-by-play. And Kate Burness now being in Rod Smith's old chair, running the panel at halftime and before the games. It's interesting times, exciting times for everybody.
Absolutely. It's just great to have them back. I should alert everybody watching on TSN2 that in about 90 seconds we're going to bail out for the Olympics. We'll continue streaming online and on TSN 1050. But, it's you don't know exactly where all this goes, but there's optimism in terms of people being back in the seats watching CFL action.
I'm just looking forward to putting my television on, turning on a football game and being interested in watching it. And I happen to be, I'm a rare person. I am an Argo season ticket holder.
And yes, you are.
And in a few weeks, they're going to have their home opener. And I know we're going to go. And I'm already feeling a little bit nervous about it and unsure about it. But I'm looking forward to seeing, the people that we hang with in our seats and the people who sit beside us, and hopefully they're going to be there distanced.
Yes.
As they were in the, weren't necessarily in the past, although most Argo games had been distanced.
On the one side, sure.
Yes. But I'm looking forward to, I love football.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking forward to seeing it now, and I'm looking forward to, the NFL coming back with fans in the stands in September, and football makes me happy.
There's some semblance of normalcy here. It's sort of stuttered because you don't know exactly how long it's there. If there's a setback, you always prepare for that. But marching forward, and certainly a busy summer. I mean, you're talking about watching sports. I don't think I've watched as much sports in the summer ever in my life than this year. And so there's plenty to watch. So we'll say goodbye to those watching on TSN 2 as Overdrive continues on TSN 1050. Jim Taddy and Steve Simmons here today, tomorrow, and Friday. Mail it in Friday. So I wonder what our version of mailing in Friday is.
I'm ready to start mailing it in Thursday.
Well, there's plenty of Olympic stuff. Actually, Friday we could be talking about an Olympic gold in women's soccer. But in the meantime, let's bring in Devin Aru from CBC's Olympics coverage, one of their ace reporters. Devin, welcome. How are you today?
Well, I'm exhausted, you guys, as you can imagine. It was an incredible scene at Olympic Stadium last night. I think I was the last one out of the building. I had the media bus to myself, but this place was buzzing as Canadians watched Andre Degrasse here in Tokyo sprint to gold. It really was an incredible scene.
Well, we've been talking about it a lot of the show today, Devin. And before I get to my question, I just want to pass on a compliment. On the golf course, both yesterday and today, someone said to me, who is Devin Haru? And I said, why are you asking me that question? He says, because we've been following him throughout the Olympics, and he's doing an incredible job. So I'm passing it on now.
Thank you.
Before I get to Andre, what did you take from what you saw? I mean, it was this morning in Canada. And, you know, we've been buzzing all day because of it. What did you take from what you saw today?
Here's the thing. How many times, Steve, and I know you've been at many of these, how many times have we gone into a big event where Canada maybe should have won, probably could have won, and hasn't? And there I was sitting in the front row of the press tribune last night, right in front of the track, the closing meters, and there was this incredible calm that sort of washed over me and seemingly washed over the stadium. Of course, it's a real scene because there are 65,000 empty seats. We know one of the greatest spectacles in sport is when that hush falls over the crowd and the gun sounds and the roar goes. We know that Andre Degrasse loves a crowd. He loves the big stage. And so what I was concerned about, because I talked to Dave Moorcroft and Michael Smith, our great commentators, they said, this guy is so ready. And so we felt like Andre Degrasse was ready to go, but there was always that feeling because of so many past experiences that maybe he won't be able to get the job done. But then the poise, the swagger, the meeting of the moment, and when that gun sounded and he rounded the bend, he told me after the race he knew he had to keep it close in the bend. If he was close coming down the stretch, he was going to win that race. And when I watched that speeding Canadian blur zoom past me and the Americans bearing down on him, it's one of the greatest moments of my career to bear witness to that live, because it, and I get goosebumps telling you guys it right now, because this was a Canadian that was supposed to win because of his run the night earlier here in Tokyo, and he did it. He absolutely delivered. This is a guy that in five Olympic events over the two games has won a medal every time. That elusive gold had escaped him until last night. He said it was a race of his life. You saw how overjoyed he was when he collapsed to the track. Beautiful scenes with his family. It was magical, Steve, and he did it. He wasn't going to be beat in Tokyo last night.
Devin, you know, to those of us on the outside, we're dealing with no crowd and heat. Which one is the bigger obstacle?
For me or for the athletes?
Listen, go down both roads.
Yeah, exactly. The heat last night was suffocating. And I've been out every night here in Tokyo at every venue. It literally is like a broiling oven. And when you open the door, you're smacked in the face with that wave of heat. It is enveloping. And the way these athletes, I don't know if we're going to talk about what Pierce LePage and Damian Warner are also doing. It was 47 degrees inside that stadium at points yesterday. It was about 35 degrees with the Humidex when Andre Degrasse sprinted for gold. Andre said that he needed to be physically ready. He needed to be mentally ready. That's what was going to be the difference in the race last night. He actually said the reason he was mentally ready is because not only does he train 6 days a week, two times a day, he also has those kids to take care of. So he said he was mentally prepared. But this heat is wearing down the greatest athletes of all. And for Andre to put forward that performance in the stifling Tokyo heat last night, like I said, it's suffocating. I think it even adds to how impressive his performance was. 19.62, the best race of his life. He set three Canadian records here in his, what, six races? We're watching one of the greatest performances ever by a Canadian athlete.
Well, I'm in my car this afternoon, and I told this story a little earlier. I just had to phone Donovan Bailey just because I needed to talk to somebody about what I'd just seen. And not trying to call him, just because I happened to be there in 96 when he won the two gold medals in sprinting. And what took me back today was Atlanta lied when it got the Olympics about the temperature in Georgia in the summer. What they did is they took the temperature from 3 a.m. and put that down as the average temperature rather than what it was like at noon or what it was like in the morning or whatever. And so it was blazing hot when a lot of, you know, good stuff was happening at the Atlanta Olympics for Canadian athletes. And I thought of that today watching DeGrasse and now watching Damian Warner, who looks like he's off to a fabulous start in his event.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when they were sprinting in the 100 meter, the first event, there were temperature readings that felt like 47 degrees yesterday morning here. And I know there's this massive conversation brewing right now, and we're going to learn today whether this women's gold medal soccer match is going to be moved to a later time, because at 11 a.m. time frame, Steve, here in Tokyo, is the hottest part of the day. In that same Olympic stadium is where they want to play the gold medal match, and it's going to be the same type of weather, upwards of 45 degrees. So I know they're looking at moving that, but yeah, you talk about wanting to speak to Donovan, and that's what I was reflecting on as well. You know, we loved Saturday nights in Georgia in the heat all those years ago, and now we love Wednesday nights in Tokyo for Andre DeGrasse. And, you know, there are inspiring Canadian performances happening here, and I know you know that I've covered these athletes who have come here over the last 15 months extensively. There was a high level of anxiety and unknown about how they were going to be able to perform. Canadian athletes faced incredible restrictions more than many other places in the world. And so there was apprehension and there was a lot of tempering of expectations on how these athletes were going to perform here. And then, of course, the pool party happened and the swimmers were hit hard. And now we're seeing these great performances on the track, capped off with Andre DeGrasse's gold medal in the heat. So it's really wonderful to see them excelling. They've had to endure, right? They've had to endure, and their physical preparation, their training, their mental preparation has been tested in ways perhaps we've never seen, and they're persevering and they're finding their way to the podium, and for Andre on top of the podium.
Devin, just clarify the soccer for us. What are they looking at, and when would that be made official in terms of changing the time?
Yeah, Jim. So right now that game is scheduled at this point for 11 a.m. Friday morning here in Tokyo, 10 p.m. Eastern, Thursday night back in Canada. Sweden was actually the ones who put forward the request to change the time. They did it even before they knew they were in the gold medal game. So what I'm hearing from people on the ground here is the Swedes were actually concerned about that time slot and temperature and excruciating heat even before they got there. Of course, the Canadians joined in their concerns, and the Canadian Olympic Committee sent out a statement saying they support Canada soccer to wanting to move the game. Right now, I can tell you that organizers here are looking at moving the game to Yokohama Stadium. That's where the men's final, soccer final, is going to go on Saturday night at 8:30 p.m. The reason they can't move it to the night Friday here at Olympic Stadium is because they have athletics inside that stadium starting at 8 p.m. here. So that's out of the question. The logistics are great. You know how much it takes to move these. So now we're going to find out how important athlete safety and health is to the IOC, because from what I'm hearing from doctors who are flooding my inbox, they're saying this can't go forward. This could be deadly in some cases with the heat these athletes would be playing in. So that is what's at stake here, right? So Yokohama Stadium is in play, and my sense from who I'm talking to is that they would play it Friday, you know, maybe late afternoon or into the evening. We'll learn in the next few hours because the clock is obviously ticking.
And had it been the U.S. playing in the gold medal game rather than Canada,
right,
you know that NBC would be making that decision, not the IOC or anyone else. And now NBC, exactly, because it involves two countries that aren't named the United States, they don't care a bit.
They don't care.
So this game can be played anywhere. And I want to ask you this, and I'm trying not to be negative in terms of asking it. Do the Canadians actually have a chance against Sweden?
I mean, they beat the Americans, and I don't think many people gave them a chance.
No, but the Americans had a bad tournament. Possible. The Americans had a bad tournament across the board. Sweden has been the best team all the way through.
Yeah, they did. They absolutely did. I mean, what can I say? I mean, what we're seeing right now from this Canadian women's soccer team, listen, they were close to not even making it through the quarterfinal, right?
Well, they haven't scored a goal in the last two games.
Right. And that was the concern coming into the tournament, is that they couldn't score a goal. It's been a concern here. They found a way to win. Steve, you've covered enough championship runs from teams where it's sort of unexplainable of how a team found a way to make a comeback or did something. I think whenever you're on a championship run or a gold medal run, you have to do unexplainable things, and I think this team is doing it right now. But I hear you, and I think your concern is warranted because they haven't been able to do anything offensively. Defensively, I would say they have been pretty good, right? To keep the Americans off the score sheet is a feat in itself. Like you said, the Americans were not their best in this tournament. Listen, it's a one-game showdown in the Olympics in excruciating heat. From what we've seen here, anything can happen. That's what I'll say about that.
And you said it would be 45 degrees Celsius when they play?
Inside, our CBC crew there yesterday at 11 a.m. got readings on the track that felt like 47 degrees on the track with the Humidex at 11 a.m., the same time that game is scheduled to be played on Friday morning here.
So less will happen in soccer than normally happens? The soccer lover says?
You're going to get me in trouble, but listen...
Oh,
you guys still there? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I would say that sprinters love the heat, right? They're even being pushed a little bit here, but 90 minutes, maybe plus more, right, on what is an oven inside the Olympics. There's no air movement inside that stadium. Absolutely no airflow, right? Because they've got it. They've got the stadium sort of covered over the top, no airflow in there. So, like I said, when I was down there last night at 11 p.m. trying to file that DeGrasse piece, it was feeling like 35 degrees at 11 p.m., stifling, not one little breath of air in there. So these women will, you know, they'll be up against it, and that's why they want it moved. It's not going to be much better, but it's going to be a lot better than, you know, a piercing sun and 45, 47 degrees.
I remember being in Beijing for the opening ceremonies and in the stands, and the place was like packed and you could not stop sweating. And I was beside my friend Terry Jones of the Edmonton Sun, whose nickname is Large, which tells you all you need to know. And I wasn't sure he was going to live through the opening ceremonies. And thankfully he did, and everything went fine. But that's the hottest I think I've ever been.
Yeah, you know, I lived in Bangkok. I was a foreign reporter in Bangkok, and I tweeted yesterday that I had never felt heat like this before, you know, before moving to Bangkok. And it's that humidity, right? I mean, I just went and got a coffee to wake myself up on 3 hours sleep here before I talk to you guys. And you walk out the door, you walk out the air-conditioned hotel, and those sliding doors open. And like I said, you've all opened an oven before and been hit by that blast. That's exactly how it feels. It's already above 30 degrees here. And what time is it? It's 7:38 a.m. here in Tokyo, and we're headed for another, you know, 40-plus degree day here. So, you know, what's fascinating about all of this is prior to the pandemic and that dominating the headline, the huge concern coming into these games was the heat. That was the storyline. There's always that dominating narrative going into the games, and it was Heat. And because of the pandemic and the restrictions and positive cases that have dominated the headlines for 16 months, it kind of sort of went away because journalists had other things to talk about. But now the thing that everybody worried about for athlete safety and conditions and the ability to perform is coming to a head. This was always going to be an issue. Everybody knew it. There were a lot of conversations about wanting to move this to the fall. They didn't do it, and here we are.
Devin, just one more before we let you go. Simone Biles, you know, I think there's the way it played out here. How did it play out there?
What can I say about this? A lot of conversations. I think it was a hard story to tell sometimes. I think there are a lot of conversations, obviously, around mental health that are going to continue. That started with Naomi Osaka. So that was going to be the conversation always coming into these games. And, of course, she was out in round three. And then you had Simone Biles pull out and talk about her mental health concerns. It's a tricky one for journalists, talking to my colleagues. But I think it's an important conversation to have. And I can tell you that there were a lot of Canadian journalists and there were a lot of international media who were forgoing gold medal events to cover to be there for Simone winning bronze yesterday here in Tokyo, because she's a superstar, right? And from my personal perspective, for a champion like that to be able to go ahead and do that, I think should be applauded for that, because I don't know what Simone Biles is going through, and I think she would have been in a tough spot. I can't imagine the pressure on Simone Biles. I know there were a lot of NBC people who, Steve, you were talking about NBC earlier. They built their entire Olympic programming around Simone Biles. So I can't imagine the conversations that were going on there, but it dominated. It dominated the stories here. It's an important conversation to have, and one of the best athletes of all time was on the front line of it. And here's what the final thing I'll say about this, Jim, is this isn't a conversation that's going anywhere fast. That's what I'll say about it.
Devin, thanks very much. Really appreciate your participation here.
Absolutely. You guys take care.
Thank you. Devin Haroux, CBC Olympics reporter. The Biles story for me is a landmark. I'm sorry that it had to happen, but I'm glad that it did.
I feel much the same way as you say right there.
Yeah.
Because I've been exposed in so many different ways to mental illness through relatives, through people I know, through my own personal issues, through however you want to look at it, we haven't seen it come out publicly in sport very often.
No.
I mean, we've seen individuals in some team sports come out and say, I have had, you know, depression, or I have had anxiety or whatever. Shane Corson had serious issues when he played for the Maple Leafs, for example. But I think that what will happen best and most importantly out of this is there will be an ongoing dialogue.
Yes.
And there will be a greater understanding. And there will be a greater leeway or rope for athletes who have issues and who have problems. And who, you know, the thing about what we have to understand is this isn't a sports story per se. This is a life story.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's about us having more empathy for our friends and our family members and our relatives and everything along those ways, understanding what it is they are going through, whether they're just getting through the day or whether they're, you know, up on a balance beam trying to do what a gymnastic does or trying to play tennis or whatever it happens to be. I don't think it's a sports story. I think sports can make it a more human story.
Well, and that's you know, part and parcel of what the Olympics are all about, too, is there's a lot of humanity on display and a lot of human stories. I really love the fact that she was able to tell us her mental state and not wanting to participate in, and then was able to work through it and get back to competition. I think that's somewhat remarkable that all that could happen in a short period of time from a star athlete that as Devin detailed, I mean, you know, the NBCs of the world make money off these people, and I don't know what they get out of it, but you know, there, some of the criticism in the past would have been motivated by people who were disappointed they couldn't make money off you.
Well, I'm not even sure it's motivated by that. I think you know, today everything, with social media being what it is, everything is an argument and everything is a fight and everything is take a side and blame somebody. And there's so much of that going on in the world, and I think it's frankly quite destructive.
Yes.
But having said that, I'm watching this, and on one side of me, I'm cheering like heck for Simone to do what it is she does best. And on the other side, I'm cheering like heck as a Canadian for Ellie Black to do what she does best.
Yeah.
And it's like someone's going to finish third and someone's going to finish fourth. And
by the slimmest of margins. By the
slimmest of margins. And I was, one minute I'm hoping for one, and one minute I'm hoping for the other, and one's a sporting story and an injury comeback, and the other's a human interest story and with arms and legs and so many aspects to it. I mean, we've worked with Michael Landsberg over the years. We know all he's done in his fights for people with mental health issues of different kinds. And, you know, until you live it, until you see it, until you experience it, whatever, it's really hard to understand the power of it.
Yeah, I just really applaud anything that allows somebody to say exactly how they feel and to work through it on a world stage and come up with, I guess, a way to move forward. I think that's absolutely phenomenal that we saw that happen.
Yeah, and I think we're going to remember her partly for being maybe the greatest gymnast we've ever seen and for maybe changing the way people think about mental health.
Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and streaming online. Final segment for a Wednesday. And, of course, Steve and I will be back tomorrow and Friday.
Six more hours to go.
Yeah. I was thinking about the weather. I mean, so I did the translation, 116 degrees. That's perfect soccer weather. I mean, my goodness. I wouldn't golf at 32 degrees.
How much water do you have to take at that temperature?
You couldn't control your body. I mean, you would literally have to have water going in every second.
And you would need, it's too bad that they don't have like unlimited benches in soccer so you could, you know, you could put a guy in and then put a lady in and take her out.
I mean, that's a pretty exhausting sport for 90 minutes running around. I just don't, that's just almost, it's inhumane to expect anybody to play in those conditions.
No, it's crazy. And I'm not convinced, knowing the IOC as well as I know them, that they'll do it.
Well, we're not talking about being sick here. We're talking about something really serious happening.
Absolutely. And I think the only reason that the game will be changed, if it is changed, it's because the network that brings in the most money for the Olympics doesn't have a horse in this race.
Yeah, I don't see how anybody could endure that without serious ramifications. And I'm not talking one person here. I'm talking everybody.
I remember it. This is the Los Angeles Olympics, and it was the 1984, and it was the first time they had a women's marathon. They had never had a women's marathon before. And so all eyes were on what was going to happen, you know, a woman running marathon in very hot conditions on the day of the marathon. And there was a Swiss runner who came down to the final, say, 100 yards of the marathon, and she collapsed and went into convulsions. And it was one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen at a sporting event. We've seen it in the past where athletes have not been. I remember the guy who dropped and his father carried him almost across the finish line years ago. But this was my first Olympics, and it was my first women's marathon, and it was like stunning to see this. And you wonder tomorrow if they are in fact going to play in the kind of conditions that Devin Haru talked about, that I don't know how you can, you know, allow that.
Well, and everybody understands the temperature, so it's not a breaking story. It's not something that's developing overnight that's a severe change. This is the way it is.
Running the 100, for example, you're out there for 10 seconds.
Yeah, no, I get
it. This is 90 minutes of soccer.
The way I'm going to say this, Steve, is You're with me tomorrow, and again on Friday. We've got plenty of time to deal with this. And that's my way of thanking everybody for stopping by, and have a great night. Thanks for being with us on Overdrive on TSN 1050.